Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Intro day! I had to let the whole thing play. I'll probably fade it out a little earlier in future episodes, but welcome everybody. This is the Mass Effect Lorecast. This is your host Tom, or Robots. I'm here with Sam. Sam, we got a new intro, buddy.
Yeah, I love that. That's amazing. It's perfect, you know, as we're going into year three in about a month.
Yeah.
Of the Lorecast.
Yeah, yeah. So that people should recognize that song. The intro is of my own concoction. But yeah, Sam had the idea. He was like, there's some other people online who have done like this like rock intro version of Leaving Home from the game.
Leaving Earth.
That's it. Leaving Earth. I'm bad at names. Leaving Earth. And I took all the time to put this together, listened to it, looked it up, you know, like have typed that in multiple times and I still get it wrong. But then, yeah, Sam was like, well, it would be really cool if we have one of these. Maybe they'll let us use it. And I was like, oh, yeah, maybe I could just make it. So I did. And there it is. So I hope you guys like it. But yeah, I'm excited about that. And I'm excited because today we are talking about mass death.
Yes, mass death. That's the sequel in the series.
Mass death effect.
No, but, you know, on the topic of leaving home is hard enough. And leaving Earth was a hard scene to watch. But what we're going to talk about is even harder.
Right.
That's the genophage. We've already referenced genophage.
Wait a minute. Didn't we? We already talked about this.
Yeah, we did.
We're just doing the same episodes over and over again. That's where we're at.
Yeah, you know, I've heard from a lot of cynical listeners. They're like, how long are you even going to be able to do this?
Yeah, you know what? A lot of other podcasts on the network get those questions, too. I saw somebody saying things like, well, now that you guys are speaking about a different show, now you guys are almost done with the podcast. And I was like, wait, what?
I didn't say that.
It's not one of my shows, but I asked the creators, like it was in our Discord. I'm like, are you guys wrapping up the podcast? What's going on? And they're like, no, we're just almost done with this section of the content. Like, you know how you can divide up a show about lore. And so maybe you're going over like all the characters. And so you're getting close to having talked about all the characters or something. That doesn't mean there aren't like hundreds of other things to discuss in a big RPG, or, you know, like there's so much out there. So yeah, totally understand how people.
Yeah. So just to quell everyone's concerns, because if you clicked on this episode of the Lorecast and thought, didn't they already talk about the genophage? Are they running out of content? No, we're not even close. And we are reviewing this because we talked about it in context of other things before.
Right.
First time was about 100, like 99 episodes ago, I think.
Yeah.
When we were talking about the Krogan rebellions, because of course the genophage is an integral theme in that one as well. Then we talked about it again in episode 19 about the Krogan, and we've addressed it several times since then in passing. So it's been a while since we first covered it, but there were a lot of elements that we didn't get to. We covered the genophage as a bioweapon, but so today, since we've been talking about medicine, it's my goal to examine it more with a scientific eye.
The science of the genophage.
There we go.
I
didn't have that in the show notes, but we've just now come up with the title of this episode.
That's going to be the title. Okay, so let's go through and refresh everybody on how it was created and why.
Right. So as people know, the Krogan had a rapid breeding rate before the genophage. It was just super fast.
Like bunnies on crack.
Yeah, exactly. And they had this very aggressive attitude that was fomented from the basically originally the hostile nature of Tuchanka, where Krogan had to be aggressive to survive. And then it evolved over time. They had a nuclear winter. They were uplifted. They still retained that kind of aggressive attitude. But then they were heralded as saviors of the galaxy after they defeated the Rachni.
Yeah.
So you combine all those factors, you get a lot of Krogan, and you get this uncontrolled expansion that goes on after the end of the Rachni Wars for about 400 years. And then they start colonizing worlds that are already colonized.
Right.
And that's a problem.
I don't know if that's called colonization anymore.
Right. Well, actually, that would be called colonization.
I guess that raises a really interesting question. What is the boundary between colonization and just conquest? I think colonization assumes that the groups you're taking over are at a lesser stage of civilization than you are.
In the Mass Effect universe, I believe colonization has often referred to populating an area that is not populated with sentient life.
Yeah. So, okay. I can see that too. But, interesting.
Of course, that's not how it's been used in our world.
No, not at all. But yeah.
But in the Mass Effect universe, I feel as if that's the way that it has been kind of referred to. But the Krogan start invading, basically invading worlds, and it becomes a tipping point when they get to Lucia. And the Asari, the council, they tell them you need to leave because it's an Asari colony that's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so they're not just colonizing a world without intelligent life.
No, they're
this,
not.
This is, I mean, conquest.
And they're not great at sharing in the sandbox.
Yeah, they don't play well with others, sure.
Right, at this time anyway.
Yeah.
And so this Warlord Kredak, barges into the council chambers and says, you know what, you want us to leave? Make us.
Right. Right.
And for all intents and purposes, appears to assault the council. That kicks off the Krogan rebellions. And despite some very clever and effective clandestine operations from the newly formed Spectres, which we did an episode all about that. If you'd like to hear more about that, go listen to that. Despite these operations, knocking out power grids and infrastructure and things like that, the Krogan are still winning. And so from the Codex, we read, quote, from the start, the Krogan had overwhelmed the Council. Only timely first contact with the Turians saved the Council races. The Turians fought the Krogans to a standstill, but the sheer weight of Krogan numbers indicated the war could not be won through conventional means.
That says a lot about the Turians and the Turians' ability to stand up against them.
It does. It says a lot about Turian military might. However, yeah. Aren't you getting a little bit of vibe from that of like, they just wouldn't quit, and the Pacific theater and World War II and the kind of justification, the incoming justification for using a weapon of mass destruction.
Right. It didn't matter how many times we put them down or killed them or how many casualties they had. They just kept coming. And so we had to do something drastic.
That's the rationale. Yeah. So Solarians developed this bioweapon that is so terrible that they believe it must scare the Krogan back to the bargaining table just by the very threat of using it.
Like the nuclear option was in World War II.
Yes.
Which, again, also didn't work that way. We had to be used twice before it actually did the thing that people hoped it would be done just by the threat of it.
I'm sure World War II scholars will have something to say about, you know, diplomatic cables back and forth between the United States and how often and to what degree the United States did try and wield it as a deterrent before using it. Mm-hmm. But in the case of the Salarians, they did want to use it as a deterrent. The intention was not from the Salarians to immediately use this weapon to quell the rebellions.
Right, right.
So it's called the Genophage. And it's designed to cancel out that insanely quick reproduction rate from the Krogans. It is a truly terrifying weapon. We'll get into the scientific nitty-gritty as to why in a little bit. But it effectively cancels out that reproductive rate by ensuring that not enough children are born. And it's dispersed via something called the Shroud. We are all familiar with the Shroud because of Mass Effect 3, where we use it to eventually disperse the cure of the genophage. But before it was dispersed, before the genophage itself was dispersed using the shroud, it was actually used and primarily used to stabilize T'Chanka, the Krogan homeworld, the atmosphere of that planet. Mm-hmm. So I find it a little bit painful, the poetic irony there, right? Like the Salarians giveth and the Salarians can taketh away.
Right. Yeah. They established this. I mean, basically it was a tool to do something good and then is wielded to do something very terrible.
Yeah. And it's just kind of, it's enlightening as to, even though the Salarians only wanted to use the weapon as a deterrent, they still had no problem uplifting the Krogan in the first place, when part of that was stabilizing T'Chanka's atmosphere from the nuclear winter. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, to what degree do the Salarians also look down upon the Krogan as being a lesser species that needs uplifting? And that we've uplifted them, we have the right to wield this deterrent.
Right. I brought you into the world. I can take you out of it.
Pretty much. That where would you be without us?
Right.
That kind of thing. Yeah. And so, yeah, it's just kind of painful to realize that they use this thing that was originally meant as a humanitarian, even though that word wouldn't fit.
Right.
As a humanitarian measure to help the people of T'Chanka. And then now they're threatening to use it to disperse something that would decimate. Decimate isn't even an appropriate word either, because that means 1 out of every 10.
It means 1 out of 10. This is more like 99%.
Annihilate. This is annihilate.
Right.
Their numbers. So, but it was actually the Turians who pulled the trigger before extended negotiations could even take place. That's why I was referencing the World War II diplomatic cables. Mm-hmm. So the Turians so hastily, and we know this because of the Citadel DLC, the archives, they so hastily pull the trigger on this that it's kind of shocking. And it doesn't look like extended negotiations could take place. I'm, you know, if someone can correct me with some source in the lore that shows that they did go back and forth and the Krogan just wouldn't give up, you know, good. I guess I could believe that. That is plausible. However, the Turians, and for all intents and purposes, didn't look hesitant to wield this extremely devastating weapon. And it makes sense, because if you go back to our Turian episode, we talked about how they always practice this doctrine of overwhelming force, right? Mm-hmm. They love pounding someone into submission.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That was very close to one of your other quotes, but yes.
Jesus Christ, that's Jason Bourne.
That was the wrong sound effect.
I was like, what was... Okay.
Sorry, I thought that was the we'll be right back one.
Oh, brother, this guy stinks!
Anyway.
Pounding into submission. Okay, go on.
They love...
Pounding.
Pounding people
into submission. Right.
Man, we couldn't get like 4 episodes from the episode 100 before we went back to our gaffes again.
Nope.
I'm not even, why am I including you on this? It's my gaffe.
I didn't do it this time, guys. Not me. No,
it's mine. And I'll own up to it. So the Turians, they believe that, the Codex tells us that they believe not in simply defeating an enemy, but to stop them from ever becoming a threat again.
Pounding them into submission.
Right. The Turians pounded the humans into submission on Shanxi.
Yeah, that stopped the humans from ever coming back.
Oh, definitely. Well, they were stopped. They were held back by the council.
At that moment.
Yes, at that moment.
But because it didn't quell the human desire to push back against them, and or for groups like Cerberus to form and think that they needed to control the galaxy or whatever, right?
It's true, but the Turians were bombarding Shanxi from orbit, and they were doing it to even eliminate small marine strike teams that they saw going through city streets. I mean, they're taking out entire city blocks for that.
Right.
So that gives you a good optic of how the Turian military, just overkill. Yeah. Just complete overkill.
Right, right. Just completely destroy everything and give them no chance to even come back.
Right. So not really surprising from that perspective that the Turians pulled the trigger on the Genophage right away.
Right.
And for this reason, I wonder if a lot of Krogan resentment toward the Salarians, at least from what I detected in the games, it almost seems like they resent both the Salarians and the Turians, but it seems like maybe the Salarians a little bit more. And I don't know if that's right. Yes, the Salarians definitely designed this thing, the Genophage.
Right.
And so they definitely, if I were Krogan, I would resent them for that too. But I, you know, good luck trying to reason with them that, hey, you know, it was the Turians who pulled the trigger. Like,
yeah, that's a, yeah. It's like the equivalent of like, well, he's the one who did it, but you're the one who told me to do it. But like,
right.
Okay. But
he's the one who shot me.
Right.
But yeah. But you gave him a gun.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, okay, well, you're both in trouble, but yeah, I can see. And it totally makes, I mean, you also have the history of the Salarians uplifting them and all of that. And which, to go back to what you were talking before, is meddling with them 100%. Even though they stopped the nuclear winter, they helped them survive. They're still meddling in things that they were never invited in to do in the first place.
Right. And they did it because it was a means to an end. You know, right. I said earlier it was a humanitarian thing. It was a means to an end. They needed a soldier.
They needed
soldiers to fight the Rachni.
Yeah.
So the Salarians in STG, which were effectively what the Spectres were modeled after, and other law enforcement or military sectors will advocate that it wasn't designed to be so devastating. But it causes a societal collapse on a society that was probably fragile to begin with.
Right.
So this Krogan natural aggression, and you combine that with this imminent sense of doom now because their numbers have been annihilated, leads to constant battles over female Krogan capable of giving birth to live offspring. Which undoubtedly leads to more death. Maybe some female Krogan caught in the crossfire or actively engaging in the battles, which exacerbates the issue.
Yeah. So I mean, there's the female population is absolutely tiny. Like we can count on like one hand, the number of like, I mean, there's barely any left, right?
Right. We only meet Eve in the game.
Right.
And that could also be, though, because they are sequestered unto their own clans.
Right. Do we see any in the background or in the...
There are with, you know, I've been playing with mods so much lately that I forget what vanilla is like. Yeah. And mods do add some. But, you know, they rarely leave their home worlds. And after the Genophage is implemented, they are treated extremely precious, understandably. And apparently crimes against a female in Krogan tribal society are met with the harshest penalties.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it makes sense.
But there's another twofold factor. The psychology leads many Krogan to just say, screw it. We're doomed anyway. And for many of them, fighting and war is really all they've ever known. So it's hard to say whether it's all nurture or some nature too, but many give up on concerted efforts to reproduce enough to grow the population. For those who reserved enough hope, though, to give anything a try, we learn in Mass Effect 1 from Garrus, he tells us, there's a lively black market trade in Krogan testicles.
Oh, no.
Because it's not confirmed and it's completely unsubstantiated, but there's a belief that testicle transplants can counteract the effects of the Genophage.
Right. Oh, man. So much of this stuff is actually pulled from... I mean, there's not necessarily... I don't know of a black market trade in testicles of any sort, but the idea that in extremely dire or sad situations, people grasp onto whatever they can simply because they're looking for some hope. And so... You know, sure, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, merchants and capitalists take advantage of vulnerable populations.
Absolutely.
They do. And so maybe the Krogan testicle transplant market is taking advantage of the Krogan's lack of hope.
And then the Krogans who lost their testicles to the trade. Probably,
right.
Of their own want or desire.
I wonder if the Turians are the ones selling the testicles because, first they pound them into submission, right?
Right.
And then they sell them the testicles.
Yeah, you got to pound everywhere except for one specific location so you don't ruin the product. Yeah.
This is actually how we learn that Krogan have four balls, by the way.
Okay.
Because Garrus says 40,000 for a full set.
Yeah.
And Shepard just, you can let it go. You can be like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Okay.
Four balls.
Cool.
Normal things.
Double redundancy. Triple redundancy. All right. Well, all right. So that's the genophage so far, but there's more to it. There's the scientific stuff, and we're going to get to that after the mid break. So don't go anywhere.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs. So your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this station is mine. I like the sound of that.
Here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons for being freaking awesome. And we get to welcome some new patrons this week, including Luke the Duke, 1284, Grayson B., Nicole C., and Aaron J. Thank you to all of you for joining us, and I hope you are enjoying your bonus episodes, getting your episodes a day early, any of the other stuff that you get, depending on the tier that you're at. And that brings us up to 72 current patrons, and we have our Shepherd tier patrons to call out. Koka Shins, Aaron J., welcome to the Shepherd tier. Kira C., Lieutenant Tosino, Shep Vakirian, That Spectre J, and William. Thank you to all of you guys and all 72 of our patrons for your support. If you are interested in joining us on the Patreon, go to patreon.com/MassEffectLoreCast. And just a reminder, we are only 2 weeks away because February is such a short month. We're only 2 weeks away from our episode with our patrons this month. It's always the last Friday of the month from now on. So if you would like to join us, if you are currently a tier four or higher, an N7 operative or higher, you're welcome to join us in 2 weeks. And you have time to sign up if you'd still like to join us and share some of your topics, the things you like to discuss with us. We'd love to see your ideas. Also, we have some new reviews. Check this out. We've actually got a few, Sam. We've got like four new reviews to read out this week.
Wow, do we really?
Yeah. So, we got some from America's Hat. One of them is from Canada. But the rest are from the United States. This one's from the United States. It's from Adjshd, which is spelled A-J-J-S-H-D, who writes, really fun and interesting. I'm in the beginning, robots annoyed me, but I think he's growing on me. Well, that's good. This is like a running thing, I guess. And once I get to the more present episodes where he's hopefully finished the games, it should be even better. Well, thanks, Adjshd. I appreciate you the thought on that and giving me a chance to grow on you. Thanks. Okay, we've got one from Thirsky Dog in Canada who writes, I'm Commander Thirsk, and this is my favorite show on the Citadel. Such a great show. You guys have such good chemistry, and Sam really knows his stuff. I just found you guys a couple days ago, and I've been binging ever since. Love what you guys are doing, and keep it up. Thanks, Thirsky. This one's from Born to Be N7. Who writes, love it. I started listening to this podcast last July and just signed up as a patron. Welcome to the Patreon. Thank you guys for making quality content. I played my first playthrough ever starting last July and just finished December 31st. Just snuck it in by the end of the year. and it helped me to get through a real rough time. After I finished Mass Effect 2 last August, I left for work for 3 months and couldn't play at all. So I listened to this podcast. It got me through those 3 months until I could come back home and play Mass Effect 3. Man, he did like a real world pause in a way that like we would have back in the day when the games came out, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't years, it was just months in this case. Thank you guys for that. I appreciate your hard work and dedication to this community, and I am privileged to be a patron, born to be N7, Keela Salai. Born to be, that's awesome. I'm so glad you're joining us and enjoying the show and all of that. And actually, you know what? That there's one of these shows up twice, so that's it. There's three. I didn't realize until I looked again that it's exactly the same one that I already read out. But thank you, everybody, for taking the time to leave these reviews. And if you'd like to help us out and get your words on the show in the future, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and we'll read it out. And you can always rate the show on Spotify and some other places, all of that kind of stuff. You guys know how that works. All right, let's get back to the show and talk about the science behind the genophage.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
So those are the details about how the genophage worked and kind of the motivation behind it and all that. Let's move into the scientific aspect.
Yeah, so it's extremely difficult to talk about the genophage without addressing the historical context behind it and the ongoing social ramifications. But I mentioned how we would talk about how exactly the genophage is so terrifying. Well, that's because it's like a genetic virus. It affects every cell in every Krogan. At least that's what we're told. But given that they use the shroud, what if some Krogan were away or in secluded off-world locations when it was dispersed? I tried to dig into this. I couldn't find an answer. So it's not clear if it's contagious among Krogan. It's almost certainly hereditary. But I don't know if it's, you know, like a contagion, like one Krogan can spread it to another like that.
I would imagine, being that it's viral, it probably is.
Yeah, I would say highly likely, especially with the fact that we, to my knowledge, I can't remember a single Krogan in the original trilogy who did not have the genophage.
Right. And if that was the case, the ones who didn't have it, their testicles would be worth a whole lot more.
Now, of course, we're excluding Eve from that. But yeah, all other Krogan. So, you know, we talked about this a while ago about why perhaps it was made in this way. Mm-hmm. We've talked about genetic engineering being a thing in the Mass Effect universe. The Salarians made the genophage this way so that it wouldn't be as easy to circumvent. You can't just go to gene therapy for this.
Right. So the virus infects the body and alters the genes. And once those genes are altered, they can't change it back.
It appears that it affects every cell in the body. I'm not sure if it's doing it on like a DNA RNA level, mm-hmm. But it affects every cell.
I would imagine so. I mean, the genes are part of the DNA. So by corrupting every cell, it is now basically rewriting the DNA across every cell in the body.
It's because if that were the case, then I'm not sure how the genophage would ever be cured. And it does say in the codex that the genophage could theoretically be cured if you were able to activate Krogan hormones enough to compensate. And so,
okay, but that still makes sense. It still makes sense. So like here, if we take it through the steps, you've got regular DNA, which is coded to affect your reproduction rates at a certain rate, let's say 100%, right? And then a virus, which engages with your body, infects all the cells in your body, recodes your DNA, which can happen, that there's real world precedence for this, and it affects the specific genes. And so now those specific genes only operate at like a 1% level. And I think it's probably even less than that, but let's say it just for easy numbers, it's down to 1% level, right? Now, if you were to then affect, and maybe those genes affect hormone levels, but then you were to treat the body by increasing the hormone levels back up to that 100% level, you've now basically reduced, but then rebalanced up. So the genes are still operating at a lower level on one level, but something else is affecting the hormone level and pushing it back up to a normal rate.
I wonder what the side effects of that would be.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, it doesn't sound like a
blocking a great reuptake thing. Of hormones.
Yeah, and like maybe it's a different gene in the genetic strand that activates the hormones or affects the uptake of the hormones, like you said. Like there are receptors in your brain and other parts of your body that affect the genes. And my wife actually works on some of this stuff. So if you were to reduce the reception of a gene but increase the prevalence of it, you may actually hit an equilibrium point.
We should ask Mrs. Robots about the genophage.
We should ask her. I don't know if she does anything with genes that have to do with like reproduction, but definitely brain stuff for sure.
Well, it's not, regardless of how exactly it's affecting every cell, you can't really replace the whole body. So that's the point. And it's also not a sterility plague. So it's not like, what's that movie with Clive Owen where everyone is sterile? It's a dystopian future.
The Last Man something. What was it? What was that called?
I forget the name, but it's eluding me right now. I know people are probably going to shout it in chat. If you're listening to this after the fact and you're in your car, you're shouting it at the radio, but I can't hear you. So anyway, it's not like that movie. It's not, because in that movie, everyone is sterile. So you can't even conceive.
Right.
It doesn't just make a percentage of the population completely unable to conceive. That's not what this does. And this next part, I want to issue a trigger warning. We don't normally have to do this, but I think that this one is so visceral, and there is a decent portion of this population that has been through things like this. So this part is a trigger warning because
birth and ability to conceive and all of that stuff. So if that's something that, like, feel free to skip ahead. Yeah.
Right. And so, okay. So the genophage actively prohibits fetal development past a certain point. And this must be why the writers chose the name genophage, which translates from Greek roughly as eater of offspring. Most fetuses never develop nervous systems. Some do, and are still stillborn.
Mm-hmm. So that's not the only mechanism that keeps them from developing.
Exactly. Even fewer survive through birth.
Right, right.
So to put it quite bluntly, miscarriage and stillbirth become a very regular part of Krogan existence.
Yeah, which is extremely tragic and explains how it could devastate a society.
Can you imagine the collective repeated heartbreak of 1 in 1,000 surviving? You said 1% earlier. Right. I wasn't going to correct you, but I wanted to let you go on.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
0.1%.
Yeah, no, like, no, that's extremely tragic. And just the amount of stress and, I mean, it's torment in a way.
Yeah. And of that, it is equivocal to torture.
Yeah.
It's an ongoing,
right.
widespread mass torture for the Krogan. And of that, of the 1 in 1,000, how many are being born female? You would guess half.
Statistically, it would be like 51% or something like that.
Right, but after a nuclear winter, after all of the that we would consider nurture.
Let me revise that number. In the human population, more children come to term who are male than female. Or it's something like this. More children who are conceived male, but more children come to term female. Something like that. Look it up. Mm. There's a weird discrepancy, which actually makes it not exactly 50-50, but forces the number off a little bit. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But yeah, you would assume around 50%.
You would assume around 50%. I'm not sure about Krogan biology in that way. But I think Rex, you know, given all of this, Rex says something along the lines of, why bother?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because you're just going to be sad. Like, you're just going
to torture. Get your hopes up to be tragically...
Right. Well, and the female has to go through all the dilemma of a miscarriage and any of the physical side effects of all of that, emotional, physical, like the whole thing is just absolutely tragic.
Right. Like, so I'm reminded of the Turian principle, never let your enemy become a threat again. And I'm disgusted by it. Because this targeted non-combatants. Though I'm sure the hierarchy and some in the Salarian Union would argue that all Krogan were combatants. which is also something that we've heard in real life military exchanges.
Yeah, yeah. In World War II, the phrase was coined total war, the idea that your enemy isn't just the military facilities. It is the civilian factories and maybe even the homes of the people who help promote the war effort. And that's what justified, for example, the United States with nuclear bombs. But even before that, the firebombing of certain locations, or the Germans sending planes over London. It was this justification of, if we're going to win, we have to stop the war mechanism at its source.
And total war has been a fear since.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it really
it's happening today.
War.
There are places in the world today where it's still happening.
I was just going to reference Ukraine.
Yeah.
Putin is leading a total war against and, you know, a veritable genocide against the Ukrainian people.
Yep.
Because they've quite explicitly said, we are intending to de-Ukraine Ukraine. And it's disgusting. This kind of make sure your enemy never becomes a threat again.
Right.
It's on a micro level, on a very micro level. It's kicking someone when they're down. It's, you know, not
punching their grandma. Like,
right.
And going after everybody else who also lives.
It's continuing
with them.
To fight someone who's unconscious is the equivalent of it. Yeah. It's like, what the hell? But that's a topic for another day.
Right. But but we get through all of this and it's not the end of everything, because thanks to our good buddy Morden, he cures the genophage. He redeems himself, or at least this is one of the paths you
can
play through.
Yes, you can let this happen.
Right.
It can be cured. I'm going to say cured in quotes for those listening, not seeing me on video. It can be cured in a few ways. Technically, sarin, in quotes, cures it first. That's how we're told he's able to build his Krogan army on Vermeer. And ultimately, that is why Caden or Ashley dies setting off the nuke to destroy that facility. But we later learn that there was no cure, really. It was a cloning facility. So not really the same.
No, it's not bearing children and growing them up. It's cloning individuals.
It's for military purposes.
To be part of your war effort, to be soldiers.
Right. Yeah. Using them as tools yet again.
Right.
Which is the rationale which you can use with Rex if you've gathered his family armor or passed the speech check and he'll see it. So it's not the same. So that's why I said cures in quotes.
Right.
But for Morden, yes, he cures the genophage if you allow him. But it's not before he works to alter it to remain in effect.
Okay.
So he worked on the genophage before he cured it, but he was on the other side. He was trying to make it so that it was still relevant, because the Krogan were adapting to overcome the effects of the genophage, and that his work with the STG was in part to edit the nature of these mutations to remain just as deadly, to keep that 1 in 1,000 ratio.
Keep dialing it in. Yeah.
Right. He was calibrating. So to speak.
Calibrating, yes.
So, you know, before we met him, we learn of his work on that project. I'll save the details for when we cover his character episode. But in Mass Effect 2, he staunchly defends it. He takes pride in his decision to help keep Krogan population levels down until we get to the loyalty mission. And it's not clear how exactly he and his team managed to do this, though. And I understand that Morden's prior work was addressed in the comics, so before you all jump on my case and say, well, actually, Sam, I do know, and we will cover it when we get to Morden's episode. But about the genophage, that changes when we come to Mass Effect 3, where depending on your choices along the way, I mean, you can be a total backstabbing asswipe if you want to be. It's your prerogative. It's it's an RPG game.
How do you really feel about that?
I'm bashful, you know, very bashful. You can backstab and sabotage the genophage cure. Did you ever do that in any of your? No,
I can't bring myself to do that.
I could never, but it's an option and you can do it. But most people help Morden cure the genophage once and for all, using or not using Malin's data from Mass Effect 2, and Eve, who is believed to be the last fertile female Krogan, though that claim is very hard to substantiate, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you would have to gather every one of them together and test them thoroughly in order to make sure that none of them absolutely can have any more children.
During a Reaper War. Yeah.
During the middle of this big conflict and across the entire galaxy, all of that. So,
but it makes for a good story.
Yeah. So. Yeah, sure. Sure. But so there's a third way. You mentioned three ways.
Yes. This is something that occurred to me during my partner's last playthrough. At the very end, she chose synthesis. And if you choose synthesis at the end of Mass Effect 3, it doesn't matter whether you sabotaged the cure. You can effectively cure the genophage anyway. And this is something that, you know, I'm just learning about, so I'm guessing I'm not alone in that. There must be some other Mass Effect players who are like, huh? You can cure the genophage even if you sabotage the cure. And hey, maybe you can keep Morden alive in the process too.
So the synthesis ending basically overwrites...
Yes.
Things in a way so where, some, yeah.
There are some very specific things that you'll have to do along the way. One, obviously, you need to make sure Morden doesn't die in Mass Effect 2. I think he's capable of dying. I think actually he's pretty high on the death list. And you also need to make sure that you played Mass Effect 1 and you kept Rex alive.
Okay.
And then you can convince Morden to stand down.
Mm-hmm.
If you convince Morden to stand down and you've sabotaged the genophage and you get to the very end and somehow you have enough galactic readiness points to unlock the synthesis ending, everyone's becoming part synthetic and organic anyway. Yeah. So the genophage doesn't matter.
Right. Right. Yeah. Things just work fundamentally different from that point on. Okay. But what about Andromeda? Right. Like they leave before any cure happens. Are the Krogan there still infected? Like, how does this work?
Yes. So that was kind of a writing necessity, I think, for the team. You know, I haven't heard any interviews of writers talking about it, but it just appears that it had to be a writing necessity because if you have this group that's going to another galaxy and they need to spend cryo for 600 some years and their mission is to populate that galaxy,
mm-hmm.
then you kind of can't have a 1 in 1,000 birth rate.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like, why even have any Krogan on the ship? That sounds tragic for them.
You would have to have a massive amount of Krogan to start with.
Right.
Going there.
Yeah. Yeah. And ones that want to volunteer to be basically test subjects and have a traumatic life of not being able to carry children to term.
Right. Which we already know most Krogan are not going to be scientifically inclined or exploratory inclined. Most Krogan in the Milky Way, we learn, are, you know, drawn to the mercenary life. So mm-hmm. not going to be an attractive prospect teaming up with the Initiative. But they came up with a good in-universe lore-friendly explanation. You remember how I said that Krogan were evolving to overcome the genophage?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it appears some of those colonists had that genetic mutation. And then they underwent gene therapy to boost that mutation for around 600 years.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So no longer was it a 1 in 1,000 chance for them. It actually became 1 in 25, which is still horrendous odds.
Still terrible, but way better.
Much better.
Much higher percentage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I guess that works. I mean, it's a clever solution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I see someone, Facundo in chat here says, if you sabotage the cure, Rex dies. Yes, that's true. Because he eventually finds out and confronts you in the Citadel. It's a very heartbreaking scene, and I don't recommend anyone play that more than once.
right.
I recommend everyone plays the game in every kind of way they can at least once. But that one is tough to watch, and Rex does die. However, I'm saying going into the Tuchanka mission where you cure the genophage, Rex needs to be alive at that point.
At that point, but not yes. by the DLC. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, man, this is really cool. It's a really cool look into this, and it segues very well into another Doctor who we haven't talked about yet.
Yes, it does.
Or at least their own episode.
Kind of amazing how they segue into each other like that. It's almost like it was planned. Now we're talking about Dr. Morden Solis.
Yeah, all right. So, yeah, I like Morden. Like, he's obviously did some terrible things in the past, but he's got a wonderful arc. His voice acting is really interesting. You know, like, you've got, like,
yes.
all of that stuff. Like, he's a cool character. So I'm looking forward to this. But before we head out, you got anything else you want to share?
Yeah, I'm streaming. In fact, I'm streaming right after this episode right now, because I normally stream on Saturdays. I'm not going to be able to do that one tomorrow, but I am streaming Neutral Shepherd. Neutral Shepherd is blazing through Mass Effect 2 because I realized...
Because he's not doing anything.
Because he's not doing anything. Because he doesn't have the motivation to do any of the side missions. He just wants to get through it. He's, in fact, a little disappointed he was revived in the first place. And yeah, he's just over it. And man, that game goes quick and you find yourself outmatched. Pro tip for anyone, I wish I hadn't have done this, but I've committed to it the bit and I'm going to stick to it now. Don't do neutral on insanity. Don't do a lazy insanity playthrough.
Oh, God.
Because I am getting rubber banded by the leveling, you know?
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'm not researching anything other than my own guns and armor.
Yeah.
I don't.
You're
intend
not finding
to.
Anything in any of the locations that you would be discovering extra stuff.
Yeah, like, I'm not planning on getting any of the ship upgrades because that's just too much work.
You're not getting all the XP from doing all the side missions.
Yes. Yeah. Not getting the XP. You name it.
Oof.
And so it's been tough. But yeah, I'm streaming that typically every Saturday from 6 to 9 Eastern. And I'm also continuing my Andromeda playthrough, which is equally burdensome because insanity is hard on Andromeda.
I bet.
And that's on Thursdays. And you can find me on Twitch and Twitter at N7TheLegend.
Awesome. Yeah. And all of my stuff, all my other shows, robotsradio.net. You can check out all that stuff if you're into Fallout, Elder Scrolls, Lord of the Rings, The Witcher, Starfield, which we still haven't. I thought we would have a release date for sure by today's episode, but still no news on that. But I know you guys are going to enjoy playing Starfield as well. So look forward to seeing you around in other places and hanging out on the Discord and all that kind of stuff. So thank you for being here, everybody. Chat, thank you for joining us. And until next time, stay safe in the galaxy. It's a crazy place out there. We'll see you later.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.